July 4th, 1776 marks the date when 56 men of the Continental Congress voted to adopt the final wording of the Declaration of Independence. In that document, the founders declared independence from Great Britain, while at the same time, they declared dependence upon Almighty God, whom they mentioned four times in that historic document. Mark Burrell is the author of a book called Rediscovering the American Covenant, Roadmap to Restore America. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now Mark Burrell rejoins us on the program. Mark, it's great to have you back on the program. Thank you.
Hey, Jerry. Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Now, we live in an age when the left controls much of the levels of and levers of power today in the schools, in the media, in the government, in the culture. And in light of that, is American independence ultimately at risk?
So it's definitely at risk. And I think a lot of folks who love America are asking the question, how do we restore America to the vision captured in our founding document, the Declaration of Independence? And this is what I speak to in my book, Rediscovering the American Covenant. And the key here is recognizing that what the founders did that made them successful is they put the whole thing in God's hands. You mentioned in the intro that they referenced God four times in the document. That was not by accident. This was part of the covenant that they were making, not only between them, but in the sight of God. And in the last sentence, they appealed to the supreme judge of the world for the rectitude of their intentions, the truthfulness of their intentions. And then they committed the whole thing to God, pledging their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. And so the whole point I make in the book, Jerry, is that in order to turn things around, we have got to follow the same pattern that they followed when they drafted and approved that Declaration of Independence. I submit that what we've got to do is recommit to that document. That's the biblical template for how to turn a nation, a wayward nation, back to God.
But the interesting thing, Mark, is, you know, as you well know, there are major portions of the population that no longer believe some of the core tenets that the founding fathers
right.
did believe. And by the way, let me give an analogy. I had the privilege of interviewing George Gallup Jr. About 20 years ago. He has since died. But he made a very interesting observation on the issue of abortion. And I think it applies here. It's the same idea. Here's what he said. He said 20% of Americans are, and these are his words, okay? 20% of Americans are strongly pro-life. 20% of Americans are strongly pro-choice. He said 60% are in what we could call the mushy middle, and you could get them to be pro-life or pro-choice depending on what you ask and how you ask it, as far as, you know, Gallup surveys and so forth are concerned.
Right.
Okay, I think the idea is still the same idea. In other words, 20% of Americans, let's say, are committed to America as founded, firmly committed to it. 20% of Americans are firmly committed to, you know, trying to build a Marxist utopia. I'm serious. By the way, these are probably correlative as well. In other words, the ones who are in favor of America as founded are pro-life. And, you know, the others are pro-abortion rights, etc. Okay. So, in the meantime, there's this vast mushy middle that that probably would be more inclined towards freedom, but they just are not aware of the real story about America's founded. And yeah, there were a lot of bad things that happened back then, like slavery and things like that. Things that we would all agree are wrong, but they're a part of the American history.
Yeah, and that's one of the key things is to re-educate folks as to really what was happening back then. And what the founders did that was so unique that would help them be successful. And here's where a lot of times when I'm interviewed, people ask about how do we get the messaging right? How do we get the word out there? And I think that there's lots of ways we can do that. What I'm trying to do with the book is step back a little further and say, what is it that will turn the hearts of the mushy middle and even maybe some of the 20% that are fully committed to transforming America into that Marxist utopia? What is the one thing that may change the heart of those Americans? And I believe it's only going to be through an intervention by God. And so the question becomes, how do you bring that about? And what I show in the book is that we can learn from Israel how this is supposed to work, because Israel had lots of lousy kings. Arguably, most of them were lousy kings. Not too different from what we have today, by the way. But they did have a couple of good civil leaders. They had Josiah and they had Nehemiah. And what both of those folks did when they were wanting to get back to God, they read the covenant aloud to the people, and the people recommitted. This is what 2 Corinthians 7:14 is saying when it says, "If my people will humble themselves and confess their sin, I will forgive their sin and heal their land." It's that healing, Jerry, that is critical for us to turn things around. I think we can talk till we're blue in the face to come up with different messaging. And, I work for a marketing company. We're really good at that. And I'll tell you, this is the situation is so dire because they have infiltrated all the major institutions. I believe we're at a point where God has got to intervene and heal our land, change the hearts of those who are, apathetic, don't know, or, outwardly opposed to the original founding vision. And the way to do that, according to the Bible, is to recommit to our national founding covenant. And that's what I'm trying to do with the book, Rediscovering the American Covenant.
So 2 Chronicles 7:14, that's part of the whole, promise that the healing of the land comes only through repentance. It's like somebody once said, revival or ruin. Those are really America's, two future choices. Which do you want, America?
That's right. And so how do we get the word out? What I'm hoping to do, especially with the book, I wrote it with pastors and church leaders in mind, because just like I had a lot of questions, I know that there are a lot of questions out there amongst mature Christians who have never really had a really strong biblical, and I would say theological, argument for active Christian citizenship as a duty. And that's what's different about this book. I start all the way at the beginning of the Bible, and really where civil government comes from is Genesis 9:5-6, where after the flood, the big question is, what's going to be different so that we don't repeat what happened prior to the flood? And the answer is civil government. And we learn how to start a nation, and we learn how to govern justly through the example of Israel. And this is what is missing in our theology about civil government. We don't start with Romans 13 and 1 Timothy 2, which basically say submit and pray. We start in the Old Testament and explain what the template is. And then I show all the passages in the New Testament that reaffirm that, including Romans 13 and 1 Timothy 2. So that's what I'm trying to do with the book, is to start with the Christian community and make sure that we have the best theological argument for active Christian citizenship so that we can truly have an impact for Christ, as I think the Bible, lays out for us.
It's interesting. You mentioned Genesis 9. It's in that chapter that we get the rainbow, and yet so prominent in our culture today is the symbol of the rainbow as used really more for the Genesis 19, which is Sodom and Gomorrah. In other words, it's used to promote that which God has said, this is not right, this is wrong. And unfortunately, that's where we are at a culture as we continue to go down the precipice.
Yeah, this is why I'm more convinced in my own mind that we've got to turn back to God as a nation. And recall, Jerry, that, at the beginning of our country in 1776, it wasn't an overwhelming majority that wanted to separate from England. I've asked a bunch of historians this question. It's somewhere between 30% and 50%. Is the accepted level of percentage of colonials that wanted to separate. In other words, not a clear majority. If anything, it was probably a minority. The rest were loyalists or indifferent, the mushy middle, as you call them. And yet, God honored what the founders did in the drafting and the approval of the Declaration of Independence. And I'm convinced it's because they followed the biblical covenant, and God blessed their efforts.
There's a man that deserves a lot of credit for the creation of the United States that he really doesn't get, and that's Sam Adams. Sam Adams was irresolute. I mean, he was wait, is that the right way of putting it? He was absolutely
irresolute.
Yeah, he was absolutely committed to the idea. Once he became convinced that American independence was the only way in which we could really experience our rights as Christians, as, you know, as citizens, et cetera, you know, that once he became convinced, then he managed to convince so many others through his committees of correspondence. And he was pivotal. He was pivotal to even having a meeting in the first place of the Continental Congress. He, of course, was one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. So it sometimes it takes those kind of people. And he called himself, by the way, he described himself as the last of the Puritans. Okay, now, Mark, what would you say? Well, first of all, do you have any comment about Sam Adams? Otherwise, I want to ask you another question.
Yeah, totally agree. Unfortunately, Sam Adams has been the victim of modern branding. So when you say Sam Adams, even myself as a historian, the first thing I think of is the beer. And that doesn't necessarily, create a
It's not even his image on the beer.
Yeah. And so we miss out on the fact that the thing I love about Sam Adams, not only everything you said, but he was so insistent on liberty, and liberty is the difference in America. Liberty is the difference between what we're proposing and fighting for the American founding, and Christian nationalism, at least as traditionally defined. We're not trying to impose Christianity on the citizenship. Why? Because of liberty. However, we do have a covenant that says, here's how we're going to live. We're going to use the law of nature and of nature's God as the legal standard. That's the Ten Commandments, the moral law, as summarized by the Ten Commandments. And so that's the contract. That's what we all agreed to. So you don't have to be a Christian to be a great American, but we do need to respect our founding covenant, and that's what's not happening.
Okay, we have 2.5 minutes left on this discussion. You mentioned the phrase Christian nationalism. What is it? Why do you not agree with it? Or is it sometimes, I mean, I'm sure you're accused of being a Christian nationalist. I'm sure I'm accused of it. I mean, I can't show anywhere in print where somebody says that. But to me, it's almost like a bogeyman phrase that's used to try and marginalize dedicated Christians who want to be involved as salt and light in the culture.
It is. In fact, one of the things that I include in the book that I don't think you'll find anywhere else is a table that's got four columns that describes the different positions on the proper role of civil government. The first column is the divine right of king. Second column is the divine right of the church, which is where I would put Christian nationalism as traditionally defined. So I want to come back to that. And then the third column is sort of a submit and pray, recognizing there's two kingdoms. That's where the predominant, that's where most evangelicals are. And then the fourth column is we're separate, but responsible. We're responsible to establish liberty and justice for all in the communities and nations in which we live. So that table, I think it's on page 61, really lays out the difference so that people can discuss them in a rational way. Now, having said all that, Christian nationalism has been branded to be really imposing the faith, and it's not that. Let's just pick it apart a bit. Nationalism, is God a nationalist or is he a globalist? It's really obvious God is a nationalist. First time we tried globalism was the Tower of Babel. We know how that went. Everywhere else in the Bible, God talks about nations. And so then the question is, do you want a nation that's got Christian principles or do you want pagan principles?
20 seconds left. Go ahead.
Yeah, so really that's the answer. Christian nationalism is biblical as long as there's liberty.
And liberty for all, which is interesting because, you know, part of the American experiment is it was Christians who founded the nation for religious liberty, which they then extended to other groups. And now, as Bill Federer puts it, the last ones in say, hey, the boat's too crowded. And they're trying to kick the first ones who came in, the ones who came up with the idea of liberty right. In the first place, out of the boat. Well, we're out of town. Time. Is there here's your website. DefendAmericanLiberty.com. DefendAmericanLiberty.com. Mark Burrell, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
Hey, Jerry. Great to be with you.